When thinking about events that caused the most havoc in internet history, I would say one of the main contenders would be Feminist Frequency, a crowdfunded YouTube series that would bring video games to the forefront of the online culture war. Run by Anita Sarkeesian, this unassuming woman would go on to be one of the most controversial faces on the World Wide Web, with claims of collusion and theft still lingering on to this very day. But after over a decade, I wanted to ask myself if this vitriol was really justified, which led me down an extremely convoluted rabbit hole as I tried my best to take an objective look at the rise and fall of this once online titan. So today, that's what I'm going to do. The daughter of Armenian immigrants, Sarkeesian's parents moved from Iraq to Canada in the 1970s. Her father worked as a computer engineer while her mother was an accountant. Anita was born in 1981 and raised outside Toronto with her older sister. While people have since questioned her gaming background, what I can say for certain is that her family owned an NES, which she played at around the age of 5. When the original Game Boy released in 1989, she begged her parents to buy one. They argued it wasn't a toy for girls, as it was right there in the name. They ultimately relented, even buying a Super Nintendo when she turned 10. Anita's home life was a blend of Armenian and Arabic culture. With her family still having loved ones in Iraq, she got a different view of the first Gulf War. But the differences went deeper than that. When Anita first started school, she could barely speak English. That got her bullied to the point that she never spoke Armenian again. Eventually, she learned to fit in as she moved through middle school. In those years, she tried to live up to her parents' expectations, but changed in high school as she explored the counterculture. The young teen began changing outfits at school to wear things her mom didn't approve of. She listened to grunge and Marilyn Manson. But she was also, self-admittedly, a bossy kid who had to be the center of attention. This led her to get beat up several times. I didn't fight back. I remember being like, oh, someone's punching me, cover your head and wait till it's over. And then they just got really bored. When she turned 15, her family moved to Orange County, California. It disrupted her entire social life, but she found her crowd at a place they called Hippie Hill. The school wasn't big enough for many cliques, so it became a de facto place for anyone different. Anita got into punk and started abusing drugs, even shaving her head. I was very ragey. I liked anything that was angry. I didn't like anything that was normal. Despite this, she left after a few years, finding that the group was destructive in nature. It was around this time her family got access to the internet. Her father taught her how to build PCs, and she was hooked. I had my own in my bedroom. I was building Courtney Love fan pages on GeoCities. I was learning how to code. By the time she graduated, her immigrant parents' aspirations for her had evaporated. Sarkeesian left home, couch surfing between jobs in several colleges. By 2003, she worked at a hotel and did freelance web design on the side. That year, she enrolled at Santa Monica College, which would end up being a major catalyst in her life. The school was a hotbed for radical ideas and activism. That was especially true in light of the Iraq War. She participated in protests, which encouraged her to dig into political theory. It was a class on intercultural communication that taught her public speaking and audience analysis. She helped organize on issues like climate change and alternatives to capitalism. Ms. Sarkeesian completed her undergrad studies at Cal State Northridge, receiving her bachelor's in 2007. This is when she took interest in performance as a mode of activism. She moved to New York to publicize the work of political action groups. That entailed learning photography and giving them media training. A friend from the time recalled, Anita understood how to tell stories and how to work the media. It's worth mentioning that the labels she'd place upon herself were different in this era. I was one of those feminists who was like, I believe in equal rights, but I'm not a feminist. But she, quote, fell in the wrong crowd and delved into social justice activism.
I sort of joke about how it was the most liberating thing that ever happened to me and also the most frustrating for everyone around me. Because like when you start learning about systems, everything is sexist, everything is racist, everything is homophobic, and you have to point it all out to everyone all the time. So there's a good year of my life. There's a good year of my life where it was just I was the most obnoxious person to be around.
Shortly after, Anita won a scholarship to the prestigious York University in Toronto. This was the first time her work focused on feminism. It was also at grad school that she drafted up a little idea that would later be known as feminist frequency. But before we go any further into this video, I want to give a shout out to my sponsor today, Golden Nugget Online Casino. This app has all your casino favorites right on your phone in your pocket. There are over 300 real money games, including slots, blackjack, roulette, and live dealer. This leads you to get the real Vegas experience right in the comfort of your home. And on top of this, all new customers who sign up using the promo code GFM and make a minimum $7 deposit will get $77 in casino site credits. So now, whether you're waiting at a doctor's office or doing dishes, you now have all these games one fingertip away. Make any moment golden with the Golden Nugget Online Casino app using promo code GFM and clicking the link in the description down below. The earliest snapshot of Anita's Twitter account shows it was created in November of 2008. It was used to promote a site she designed for CUPE in 3903, the campus's largest trade union. When she had only 11 followers, one of those was a man named Jonathan McIntosh. McIntosh was a well-regarded artist for his social justice activism. It's unclear how he and Anita met, although she was a fan of his self-made video remixes. The first post on her newly formed blog, Feminist Frequency, acknowledges he designed the site's graphics. The Feminist Frequency YouTube channel was created on February 14, 2009. Her stated goal was to explore media from a fangirl perspective. These early videos were simple, with her talking mostly unscripted and editing them down in post. The first went live in May, with four more by the end of the year. Her subjects included Twilight, True Blood, and Veronica Mars. The last was the Bechdel test, a measure of the representation of women in fiction. While the term was broadly understood in academia, she helped popularize it to a wider audience. This video was so big it was even shared by Roger Ebert and received 20,000 views, a pretty decent accomplishment at the time. And this was at its core the intent of her series, taking these concepts and making them mainstream.
I think that popular culture is a common language that we all speak. The poet Meryl Reichsayer wrote that the universe is made up of stories, not of atoms, and I really like that quote because I feel like pop culture is one of the ways that we learn about ourselves and the world around us.
In March of 2010, Anita was invited back to Santa Monica College for a lecture. This will come up again later, but for now it's notable for spawning her first video about gaming. As part of her presentation, she created an edit in the style of Jonathan McIntosh's work. Her next two uploads were for Bitch Media's blog, Mad World. One video proved controversial for criticizing the game Bayonetta. Anita dismissed the franchise as adolescent fantasy, calling it overly sexualized and pornographic.
First, the positive things about the game. She's a single mother, and that's kind of it.
Her video primarily centered around the game's advertising campaign, which had a billboard that invited passerbys to strip off flyers until the main character was nude. Anita argued it encouraged sexual harassment. The video was bombarded with dislikes until being set to private. It was her first significant wave of backlash, with the comments changed to require manual approval. That June, she completed her master's degree with a thesis called "I'll Make a Man Out of You, Strong Women in Science Fiction and Fantasy Television." The paper analyzed female protagonists and the problems with replicating what she called stereotypically masculine behavior. Interestingly, McIntosh is thanked in the acknowledgments. With that, she earned a master's in social and political thought. And as she completed her studies, her YouTube channel became more active. While it garnered an audience, she didn't see much growth until a new series called Tropes vs. Women. Throughout 2011, Anita examined plot devices she felt perpetuated offensive stereotypes. They included the manic pixie dream girl, women in refrigerators, and the Smurfette principle. Her videos about the demon seductress and the mystical pregnancy both hit 30,000 views within months. But easily the most popular was episode 6, The Straw Feminist. This criticized what she felt were over-the-top villainous portrayals of feminists in media. She argued they were used to imply we live in a world where gender inequality wasn't an issue, and this video got over 140,000 views, although not all of that was positive. It got enough traction for a rebuttal from the man, the myth, the legend, TJ Kirk, aka The Amazing Atheist. His video titled, Everybody's a Crybaby, is about several subjects. He begins by mocking people offended by racist Halloween costumes, including blackface.
Halloween costume, like, oh, there's a black chick, and oh, look at this picture of this white girl dressed like a black girl. Oh, that's offensive to me, because it's not a costume, it's a culture.
This leads into his discussion of Anita, or as he calls her, Anna Sarkeesian.
There's a chick, I'm sorry, a female woman, I don't know what they want to be called. She's a feminist. Her name is Anita Sarkeesian. She runs a YouTube channel called Feminist Frequency. What she literally does, she watches TV shows and movies and points out how they're sexist.
This video is so important because Kurt was the first of many to start portraying her as claiming media was corrupting, framing Anita akin to the video games cause violence crowd of the 90s and 2000s. The thing is, this actually wasn't Anita's premise of any of her videos at the time, as her argument is that it reflects harmful views on our society, not that it causes them.
I think it's important to critically engage with video games and comic books and movies and TV shows because it's a reflection of our society.
Whatever the case, it was the first time another creator picked on her show, with many TJ fans hate-subbing her channel. It's actually crazy to think about now, but in the early days of YouTube, it was a normal practice for groups to subscribe to channels en masse, just so they'd get a reminder on their feed to dislike their most recent video. The OG form of ratioing, if you will. It was an early sign of the eventual feud between atheists and feminists. A month later, her channel surpassed 10,000 subscribers. In addition to her output, she moved to San Francisco to lead several creative workshops. She also spoke at the Women, Action, and the Media Conference in LA. The activist was building notoriety, which only grew as she covered broader topics. In early 2012, she released two videos criticizing LEGO for its gendered marketing. Strangely, this is the time period that Anita and McIntosh claim that they both met each other. This is weird because we have archives showing that they definitively were talking to each other 5 years prior. Regardless of this discrepancy, here McIntosh would say about Anita, she's very personable and friendly on screen and off. She puts everybody at ease and that comes through on camera. Both videos, as well as her next about the Oscars, got hundreds of thousands of views. By May, her channel boasted over 2.5 million views and 20,000 subs. This is also when she was invited to speak at Humber College. While it's difficult to verify due to a lack of archives, this is when her channel apparently caught the attention of 4chan.
And the more popular I get, the more I get. Like, 4chan has found me, and they're atrocious. And they purposely come, like, they subscribe to my videos so that they know when one comes out so that they can attack me.
Anita mentions planning a research study about the harassment women face on YouTube. This lecture was filmed in March of 2012, with her idea laying the foundation for a new project, one that would launch her to the mainstream and break the entire internet. While Anita already planned to discuss gaming, it didn't materialize into a bigger concept until her videos about LEGO. They caught the attention of Bungie, the developers of Halo. The company invited her to give a talk at their Seattle office. It was her first time at a corporate space about games, so she had to do research with McIntosh. Anita ended up playing many titles she didn't really like and would never have played otherwise. That was reflected on Twitter, where they live tweeted, "I'm in serious video game research mode. Sadly, gotta say many of these games aren't very friendly to women. Been researching the history of female protagonists in video games for Feminist Frequency. It's honestly making me depressed for humanity." She visited Bungie on March 13th, and now holding a baseline understanding on the subject, she left with ideas on how to explore gaming further. It was also at this time that the concept of crowdfunding projects hit the mainstream. So I had this format that I liked with Tropes vs. Women, the original series, and I kept hearing about this thing called Kickstarter. If I'm going to do it, I might as well try to get paid a little bit. And with that, Anita launched her campaign on May 17th, setting a goal of $6,000. She promised 5 videos, with each focused on a different reoccurring plot device. It was funded within 24 hours, with the earliest snapshot showing over $9,000 from 344 backers. This is important because its success predates any backlash. In fact, she raised over $17,000 before promoting the project on YouTube. That proves there was enough interest for it to succeed without any of the controversy. The outrage didn't begin until after one seemingly mundane upload on June 4th, 2012.
Have you ever noticed that, with a few notable exceptions, basically all female characters in video games fall into a small handful of cliches and stereotypes? I'm Anita Sarkeesian, and I run the video web series Feminist Frequency.
The video was immediately flooded with dislikes by a larger wave than ever before. Within days, there were over 10,000 negative comments, until she finally disabled them on June 16th. What's interesting is, unlike previous videos, these messages weren't set to manual approval, so the whole world could see them. The description states, "I have left the comments open on this video as a way of showing why this topic is so important. Don't feed the trolls. Except maybe to thank them for proving to everyone that sexism in gaming is indeed a huge problem." This implies they were intentionally left on as bait, becoming the basis of a blog post 2 days later. These are the types of silencing tactics often used against women on the internet who dare to speak up. Things only intensified, resulting in a second post on June 10th. This coordinated attack has included attempts to get my accounts banned, a torrent of hate on YouTube, plus countless threats of violence, death, sexual assault, and rape. As part of that intimidation effort, the Wikipedia page about me was vandalized with misogynistic language, pornography, and racial slurs. In hindsight, something I can't shake the feeling of is that Anita knew what she was doing here. Given her previous media training, she likely knew how to leverage the negativity to her favor. It would also make sense given her previous idea of a research study. But of course, that doesn't justify some of the insane comments being left about a series that didn't exist yet, especially one already funded by her own audience. The story first got coverage from gaming outlets like GameSpot, Kotaku, and Rock Paper Shotgun, spreading until reaching The Guardian. It quickly sparked a wider debate over if and how the community should change. Her Kickstarter ended on June 17th. Raising over $150,000.
Well, aside from the reaction of the general public so far, which makes it kind of seem like you've done more harm than good for females, how about that?
While many were already shocked, it was only going to escalate. Anita was targeted with DDoS attacks and attempts to hack her account. They tried to dox her, but were unsuccessful. A wide variety of memes circulated, many using offensive derogatory imagery. This led her to make a third post on July 1st about image-based harassment. It emphasized the degrading and often pornographic images made to intimidate her. It once again got media coverage, getting her on CBC Radio. But that paled in comparison to what happened next. 4 days later, a user on Newgrounds published Beat Up Anita Sarkeesian. This flash game allowed you to simulate punching the feminist until she had black eyes. Its description ironically accused her of ignoring constructive criticism. The headlines wrote themselves, with an easy-to-point-to example of gamers' unhinged hatred. It was covered by the New Statesman again, quickly disseminating to other outlets to highlight online harassment. The trolls turned her into a martyr, garnering sympathy from the public at large. Anita was subsequently invited to EA DICE, the devs behind Battlefield and Mirror's Edge. She even held a TEDx talk about the response.
So I'm no stranger to some level of sexist backlash. I've sadly gotten used to sexist slurs and sexist insults, usually involving kitchens and sandwiches. But what happened this time was a little bit different. I found myself the target of a massive online hate campaign.
Feminist Frequency ended the year with 36,000 subscribers, and Macintosh and Anita got right to work, purchasing over 300 games for their research. While much of the backlash at the time was surface level, there was some more valid criticism. When her video on Bayonetta resurfaced, many felt it was obvious she never played the game. There was also a tweet that implied she was in favor of race-segregated classrooms. I've actually read many studies that state the opposite, that gender-segregated classrooms improve learning, same with race. It's worth emphasizing that the story of her trip to Bungie wasn't yet well known. Many questioned her intentions with approaching video games at all. The first of its kind came from a channel called Instigative Journalism. Part 1 examines the activist's master's thesis. Anita argues in it that strong female characters still aren't feminists because they're only pretending to be men. The YouTuber points out contradictions in her categorization of masculine and female traits. This is used to infer a framework for the future of her career.
She only cares about TV shows because that's all she actually watches. She's remiss to touch anything unless Joss Whedon is somehow related. She doesn't do original thinking or research and is satisfied with referencing and leaning on the things that she was taught in class. And when claiming to analyze or examine subjects, she pigeonholes them under archetypes instead of judging them holistically and matches them against a checklist of her feminist paradigm.
Part 2 scrutinizes her personal brand of feminism. It's important to recognize many of her views on sex and violence are not intrinsic to the movement. There are many opposing views within feminism that never get acknowledged in her videos. For example, sex positivity. The only time she addressed this was in a blog post criticizing the slut walk. Anita disagreed strongly enough to feel alienated within the movement. By ignoring the variety of thought, she presented her view as synonymous with feminism, when that wasn't the case. This was one of the many genuine critiques she never responded to. There's no such thing as sexism against men. That's because sexism is prejudice plus power. Men are the dominant gender with power in society. Ignoring all of her crazy trolls that could never be justified, a more nuanced view of feminist frequency at the time was that there was no way to express criticism of some of her polarizing views without being grouped into the harassment. The only criticism she ever responded to were things that were easy to dismiss, with journalists never pushing back and acting like a PR team for the YouTuber. This limited how productive a wider conversation could be. You were either with her or against her. Again, that isn't to justify everything that happened to Anita, but it explains why things escalated the way they did. It didn't help that around this time, the atheist community declared war on feminists. With Elevator Gate a year prior, tensions rose until a scientist known as Thunderfoot Online posted a video titled, "Why Feminism is Poisoning Atheism."
The problem is that many in leadership positions have managed to get themselves bullied or cajoled into this bullshit PC appeasement position by people who are conspicuous in that they proudly label themselves as feminists. Folks who find t-shirts like this offensive enough to reduce them to tears.
It's interesting that around this time, all the online atheists switched from complaining about fundamentalist Christians to feminists. It laid the groundwork for the eventual wave of skeptics and anti-SJWs that would build a right-leaning community that included a lot of the conservative Christians the atheists used to complain about. By early 2013, Sarkeesian launched a Tumblr for her series, and a month later released the very first episode of the crowdfunded Tropes vs. Women in Video Games. The first episode of the Kickstarter-backed campaign was released on March 7th, 2013, called The Damsel in Distress. It was briefly taken down after a false flagging campaign, but quickly reinstated. Within hours, TJ Kirk uploaded "Who's the Damsel Now?" He admits it was more even-handed than her previous videos, but called on Ms. Sarkeesian to face her critics and stop playing the victim.
"And I honestly have no major criticisms of its content. I do, however, take issue with one aspect of Anita's video, the fact that she has disabled ratings, comments, and even statistics. We, the audience, are not allowed to have an opinion, it seems."
5 days later, Thunderfoot uploaded his first rebuttal to Anita, "Feminism versus Facts."
I mean, really, did you have to start with the straw man in the title? Do you really think that Tropes are specifically adversarial to women? Maybe I should title this video in a reciprocatively fair fashion. Maybe something like "Feminism versus Facts."
This may very well be the origin of the idea behind "Facts don't care about your feelings." Watching with 10 years of hindsight, this video strawmans her arguments. Thunderfoot claims Anita's noticing trends that don't exist, but that's despite the trope's very long history across literature and film. He implies Double Dragon Neon isn't a valid example because it ends with a damsel punching the villain in the nuts. Her argument is that it's a plot device that happens to characters and doesn't necessarily define them. This symbolic performative gesture isn't a strong counter-argument to that.
Remember, the damsel in distress's plot device is something that happens to a female character, and not necessarily something a character is from start to finish.
I want to clarify that Tropes versus Women in Gaming isn't a perfect series either, which we'll explore later on. There are also premises I can see people taking issue with because they're simply treated as accepted fact.
The belief that women are somehow a naturally weaker gender is a deeply ingrained, socially constructed myth, which of course is completely false. But the notion is reinforced and perpetuated when women are continuously portrayed as frail, fragile, and vulnerable creatures. The gender binary is an entirely artificial and socially constructed division of male and female into two distinctly separate and opposing classes of human being.
As I watched these videos for my research, I realized that they weren't that outrageous and pretty benign media analysis overall. This shouldn't be surprising, since Anita has explained that unlike previous videos, which were much more off the cuff, these were much more intentional. They're rather adept at anticipating and addressing counterarguments.
This series will include critical analysis of many beloved games and characters, but remember that it's both possible, and even necessary, to simultaneously enjoy media while also being critical of its more problematic or pernicious aspects. Just to be clear, I'm not saying that all games that use the damsel in distress as a plot device are automatically sexist or have no value.
This was lost on many people who came away thinking this.
I mean, Jesus, girl, you are one sick puppy. So in your mind, if my girlfriend gets abducted, I can't want to protect her or to keep her safe without turning her into an object. I mean, really, by your feminist reasoning here, hospitals, you know, the places where patients come to be acted on, are actually objectification centers where people are turned into merely objects to be acted on.
Thunderfoot's first video on the subject garnered over 1 million views, spawning the profitable industry of anti-Sarkeesian and later anti-feminist content. The gaming industry, on the other hand, largely stood by Anita, with veteran Cliff Blazinski speaking out at Kotaku. He defended Tropes vs. Women's right to exist and said gamers need to, quote, grow up. If by watching Anita's videos, I, as a developer, can reconsider how I depict women in any future product of mine, then her work may very well be worth it. This belief was echoed by writer Anthony Birch and game designer Tim Schafer. On April 5th, a student uploaded a recording they took when Anita spoke at their college. During the Q&A, they read off a letter stating her trolls didn't represent gaming as a whole.
With the reply to that, I don't think talking about video games is going to help the peace on you. I propose that we promote the positives when you've done so today, because the negative will only attract more negative responses.
On April 18th, Anita appeared on CNN.
And what I wanted to do, or what I hope to do by telling my story, is to create a space where people take online harassment more seriously. There's a sort of conception that what happened to me was trolling. And trolling is largely thought of as one individual who's trying to get a rise out of another individual. And what happened to me was really a cyber mob, right? It was thousands of individuals coming after me who were loosely working together.
Thunderfoot responded by stating he had faced far more harassment.
In fact, a quick search for images of you online shows that the internet has been far kinder to you than it has been to me.
On May 28th, Anita released part 2 of The Damsel in Distress. It was once again taken down after being false flagged. This received even more rebuttals from Thunderfoot and TJ Kirk. What's fascinating is they're often arguing against points she isn't making by saying the exact same thing she states in the video. To give an example of this, TJ points out many plot devices are only used out of convenience rather than intentional sexism.
And of all the reasons that a character might embark on a quest, saving or avenging a loved one is probably the easiest to convey quickly. I think that is the reason for the damsel in distress trope. I don't think it's designed to denigrate women. I think it's just an easy plot device.
And this is what she states in her video.
Despite these troubling implications, game creators aren't necessarily all sitting around twirling their nefarious-looking mustaches while consciously trying to figure out how to best misrepresent women as part of some grand conspiracy. Most probably just haven't given much thought to the underlying messages their games are sending. And in many cases, developers have backed themselves into a corner with their own game mechanics.
Kirk then says that because most devs and gamers are male, it's only natural their views are most prevalent. but that doesn't negate the value of examining why that is. Many critics argue her series ignores the context behind specific characters and scenes, calling it dishonest. Her position is that the excuse for using a trope doesn't itself justify a trope's use. You don't have to agree with this, but at least understand what you're trying to refute in her videos. Anita is also very clear that individual games aren't harmful on their own. It's the broader cultivation effect that perpetrates harmful views.
And taken on their own, each individual example we've covered in this episode might seem relatively benign or trivial. But the reason this series focuses on tropes is because they help us recognize larger recurring patterns.
Kirk calls this contradictory, arguing she's picking and choosing when context matters. Thunderfoot summarizes her argument as, "Video games make people sexist."
I'll make this simple for you, Anita. Really, really simple. You can claim as a hypothesis all you want that women not being portrayed as you want in video games is making society misogynistic. Hell, the people who claim that video games make people more violent have a far better case than your claim that they make people sexist.
Again, she explicitly states otherwise, believing that they reinforce pre-existing views.
Likewise, engaging with these games is not going to magically transform players into raging sexists. We typically don't have a monkey-see-monkey-do direct cause-and-effect relationship with the media we consume. Cultural influence works in much more subtle and complicated ways.
On August 1st, Anita released the third and final part of The Damsel in Distress. It included her idea for a hypothetical game called The Legend of the Last Princess. Taken out of context, many were under the assumption she felt these were the only types of stories that should exist. But that's removing the nuance present in these videos.
Now, I'm certainly not arguing that all stories must include completely fearless, hyper-individualistic, heroic women who pull themselves up by their bootstraps and never need anything from anyone. Of course, there is absolutely nothing wrong with offering or occasionally needing assistance. It only becomes a problem when acts of altruism are repeatedly presented in heavily gendered ways.
Meanwhile, a page was created about her on Encyclopedia Dramatica, as more and more creators stood against the feminist writer. Anita would end up giving a talk at an event called The Conference, elaborating on the false flagging campaign. This slide includes a screenshot of a user that went by the name of Mundane Matt, who said, "The internet is finally striking back. Keep fighting. Keep flagging." He celebrated the appearance on his own channel. Among these new detractors was Jordan Owen, who began researching her past. This culminated in a video titled, "Anita Sarkeesian, The Early Years." Tensions would heighten even more in gaming discourse when Jordan Owen, an early face in the skeptic YouTube community, was tipped off with the new intel by a source familiar with both Anita and Macintosh in 2013. The user sent several links, which he made public. The first was a testimonial the feminist host did for a program called Teleseminar Secrets. The course was run by internet marketing guru Alex Mandoshin. It basically taught you how to run a multi-level marketing scheme. Her endorsement was uploaded in 2007. Now, some would argue, given the nature of the scam, she was the victim and not a perpetrator. However, in the video she promotes her own website called neonandchrome.com.
Hi, my name is Anita Sarkeesian. I'm from Los Angeles, California, and my website is neonandchrome.com.
The earliest snapshot advertises internet marketing services with a specialty in teleseminars. Anita's next connection in this leak was to a handwriting expert called Bart Baggett. Her old site lists being a seminar manager slash coordinator for Baggett 13 times. The man also did a testimonial for Mandoshin in 2007. And the funniest part of all is that he was featured in a pickup artist directory, which led many to call Anita a fake feminist. Now, while it's true she worked for Baggett, he clarified that the seminars she helped with were self-help oriented and attended by older women. The statement was provided to a journalist investigating her past, and the author admits there was even less evidence of a relationship to Mandoshin. It's ultimately kind of a nothing burger of a story, but since people always are calling Anita a con artist with this being the origin of the claim, I felt the need to include it in the video. In this expose, the final person Owen scrutinizes is her connection to Jonathan Macintosh. You see, Jonathan's Flickr proved he was an activist while he still did teleseminars. He speculated the man gave her the feminist vocabulary she was missing, with the two first interacting in December 2007.
Subsequent photographs that I won't share here depict food that John has prepared for Anita, and John and Anita visiting her parents, indicating that he is most likely her boyfriend.
Owen goes off the rails after this, accusing random cosplayers of encouraging pedophilia for some reason.
Why isn't John decrying this like everything else, especially when we see his photograph of highly sexualized Care Bears? Where is the finger wagging about how this is sexualizing children's entertainment and encouraging pedophilia?
The biggest takeaway from this video is that it began the discourse that McIntosh was behind Feminist Frequency's views. Anita responded, calling it utter nonsense, before bizarrely accusing them of victim blaming. It's hard to dismiss this claim, though, as by her own admission, she didn't consider herself a feminist until 2007, which is when she first met McIntosh. Her explanation is that while living in New York, she met activists who had been marginalized by male protest leaders. But this claim comes out of the same interview, which misconstrues when she and McIntosh actually met. This was only the beginning, with her credentials as a critic soon being called into question. The first hit to her credibility was the discovery that she used other people's gameplay without credit. The majority was taken from a channel called CubeX55. When notified, CubeX said she never asked for permission, but it should be noted that gameplay footage isn't owned by the person that played the game, making this point moot. Regardless, it was still used to infer she didn't actually play the games she criticized, meaning she wasn't a true gamer girl.
How do you feel about video games?
I still love them. I think games are really where we're going, that I'm excited to see what happens as the culture grows up.
Video games are so interesting and engaging and interactive. I'm a gamer and I enjoy games.
Then a clip surfaced from a lecture she gave in 2010.
So it's not exactly a fandom. I'm not a fan of video games. I actually had to learn a lot about video games in the process of making this.
All of these discoveries in tandem painted the image of an ideologue that only came to games cynically. For many, it was a reason to dismiss her opinion entirely.
Why are you attacking her? Are you afraid of her opinion? No, I don't give a shit about her opinion, and she's a f***ing con artist. That makes me dismiss her opinion to begin with. All right? You want to bring up the issue of sexism in games? You better find somebody who's got a little more credibility to do it.
The outrage included videos from both Mundane Matt and the Internet Aristocrat, better known as Jim. The latter's video wasn't just about Anita, but a wider issue he noticed on the internet, drawing comparisons to the atheism community.
And so you've got, that's a separate example. That's kind of what's happening with video games. You've got these political commentators, you know, these people with his agenda that are shoving it into games for no reason, right? And they're a problem, but what allows that to happen are the people that support them.
Jim chastised anyone who still defended her, which he saw epitomized in gaming journalism.
And it's not a minority opinion. It's almost, it's almost 50-50. And that's the craziest part about this. I mean, right now in the industry, we have a few crucial problems. One of them is the journalists, and I'm doing air quotes around that because half of the people who write for video game websites don't have journalism degrees.
The fake gamer allegations weren't going away, forcing her to once again respond on Twitter. Ever since I began playing video games at the age of 5, I've been told I don't belong. As a result, my relationship with gaming has been complicated. Like many women who game, there have been periods in my life when the constant sexism and alienation have become almost too much to handle. I've had a love-hate relationship with gaming over the years. I've even taken breaks. But I've always come back hoping it would get better. In hindsight, I think a lot of this comes down to Anita's own disconnect with what a gamer means. I can relate since I'm called the gamer from Mars but haven't played through a video game in over 2 years. To many, it's a term that invokes a clear subculture, while to others, it's about playing any video game. Think about the internal divide between those that are hardcore and casual. Many have pointed out she would have never played most of the titles in her series if her research didn't demand it. That's a valid point, and something she's admitted herself. But the thing is, I'd argue most gaming YouTubers play games they wouldn't in their leisure, as that's often part of the job.
So it's important to note that realistic-looking first-person shooters and other games that employ graphic violence and sexist imagery are not the only games out there, even though they do tend to get most of the attention when it comes to talk of serious gaming. Because I'm often frustrated with the male-dominated, blood-and-guts, testosterone-driven shoot-'em-up games that seem to dominate the Xbox and PS3 platforms. Having so many creative, simple, intuitive, and non-traditional games available right in our pockets has really helped bring gaming to a wider range of people, including to more women, who may have never considered themselves gamers before.
Her view is that she enjoyed gaming, but not enjoying those games drove her away from saying that she was a fan. If you asked me at the time, I would probably have said I wasn't a gamer. I don't even know if I want to say that now, but whatever. It seems like one of her goals with the series was to encourage games that didn't fall into these categories.
I want to make absolutely clear that I am in no way saying that games that involve violence are always bad or have no value. What I am saying is, at their best, video games can promote problem-solving skills, critical thinking, creative mathematics, and confidence building.
Now, there are still valid reasons to raise this point. It's a bias that's affected her work, resulting in a misleading or inaccurate portrayal of certain genres. This is important when she presents herself as an authority. I mean, Tropes vs. Women was released with a classroom curriculum. That really matters for material intended for educational use. But I don't think it necessarily invalidates all of her points. The problem is, once again, she wasn't receiving mainstream pushback. When Anita visited DICE, rumors circulated she was hired for input on the sequel to Mirror's Edge. This was debunked, but not before a petition against her involvement got 54,000 signatures. It's unsurprising her supporters remained uncritical. It served to start a conversation, which even reached Shigeru Miyamoto, who would say, "Certainly, I don't think that video games are the only genre that portrays things that way. And maybe it's just because I'm a male, I haven't given it a lot of deep thought over the years." This quote encapsulates another funny theme of the culture war. While Westerners were fighting over representation in Japanese games like Mario, the Japanese simply seemed disinterested and continued to do whatever they felt like, making all of this seem kind of pointless. In March 2014, GDC honored Ms. Sarkeesian with the Game Developers Ambassador Award. It was presented by Neil Druckmann, the head of Naughty Dog.
"She loves video games. She's so passionate about them that she feels they're worth fighting for. It is my honor to present the Game Developers Ambassador Award to Anita Sarkeesian."
This was misportrayed as her being given the Gaming Luminary Award, which would have put her on the same level as Miyamoto. Notch, the creator of Minecraft, believed this and called GDC out for being terrified of social terrorists. The conference even received a bomb threat demanding that they take back her award. The division only intensified as things continued to escalate. The possibility of any sensible discourse was lost. Angry Joe saw backlash after defending Feminist Frequency in his list of the year's gaming controversies.
"And this next thing is gonna blow your f***ing mind. Trust me, many feminists f***ing love sex."
Anita was causing a giant stir, but soon she would release a new episode of her show that would cause the largest backlash to date. In June 2014, Anita released Women as Background Decoration. This proved to be her most controversial video, with her infamous discussion of Hitman Absolution. To be fair, I think the first half of this upload is fairly well articulated. Anita discusses what she calls non-playable sex objects, taking issue with how many titles portray sex workers. This leads into her argument for why objectification is different in video games due to its interactability.
"These active viewing mechanics encourage players to collaborate with developers in sexual objectification by enabling gamers to scope out and spy on non-playable sex objects."
Where she starts losing the plot is when discussing its connection to violence. Anita argues that in many open-world or sandbox-style games, devs enable players to directly abuse non-playable sex objects.
"Players are meant to derive a perverse pleasure from desecrating the bodies of unsuspecting virtual female characters. It's a rush streaming from a carefully concocted mix of sexual arousal connected to the act of controlling and punishing representations of female sexuality.
The issue with this point is that Hitman actively discourages players from what she asserts, with her own footage showing them being penalized. By the time you reach that mission in the game, it's apparent killing anyone except your target will jeopardize your actual mission. Her argument extends further to GTA, alleging players are incentivized to murder women because they drop bundles of cash. But these are general functions of any NPC. The same applies to her idea of disposability. It's true for any NPC regardless of gender. Now, where I'll differ in my criticism is that I don't think she was intentionally lying here. Her position is that the ability to make this choice at all is worthy of examination, regardless of gender.
Typically, all the non-essential characters in sandbox-style games are killable, but it's the sexualized women whose instrumentality and brutalization is gendered and eroticized in ways that men never are.
It's true most aren't inviting you to objectify them while committing violence, but this, if anything, is a consequence of the engine. If a game is set in a strip club, should there be specific rules so that you can't injure the strippers? There are also just some ridiculous tangents that only weaken her argument further.
If caught by the police, the screen will fade to black, and 5 seconds later, your character will be standing outside the police station, minus a few dollars or items, but free to go about your business as if nothing happened.
The focus on these otherwise generic mechanics just isn't convincing, and really, it comes down to the reoccurring problem that she doesn't propose any solution. Anita acknowledges these characters are used to create an environment, yet clearly thinks it isn't unjustified. I understand what she's saying, and some are definitely egregious, but many portray how women are treated in specific time periods or environments. Oftentimes, it's shown in a negative lens in service of a greater theme or point. I don't think not focusing on the horrific reality of women's suffering invalidates that. If you're going to argue this, you have to delve deeper into why it's wrong. Her approach misses the point and doesn't interrogate the subject deeply enough. At the end of the day, I just think Anita doesn't like the idea of violent video games in general, but her making it about women just caused a new round of backlash.
The problem was that no one who played the game does that. Trust me, I watched at least 40 playthroughs and none of them attacked the dancers. Because in Hitman, you're not meant to kill innocent people. Indeed, you get penalized for it.
This is around the same time when Jordan Owen and fellow men's rights activist Davis Arini began crowdfunding a documentary to take her down, called The Sarkeesian Effect. They launched a Patreon, which quickly netted them $9,000 a month. And yes, the irony of people complaining Anita got too much money for what amounted to a YouTube video is not lost on me. But we'll get back to The Sarkeesian Effect a little later on. On August 16th, 2014, game developer Zoe Quinn's ex-boyfriend published an online expose detailing their relationship. He accused Zoe of cheating on him with 5 guys in the industry. This would spark the hashtag Gamergate, which was a harassment campaign against women in gaming, or an online movement meant to address ethics in video game journalism, depending on who you ask. A major catalyst for this were attempts to limit open discussion of the controversy, including a video by Mundane Matt that got false flagged.
What you're looking at is a copyright claim against a YouTube user by the name of Mundane Matt on a video called Hell Hath No Fury Like a Lover Scorned. That copyright claim was filed by Zoe Quinn.
Although Anita wasn't originally involved in this mess, her appearance was somewhat inevitable. In previous blogs, she criticized several platforms for their lack of adequate report systems. This became a talking point with outlets calling on Twitter to fix this free speech problem. It eventually led to a petition for Twitter to add a report abuse button, which received over 130,000 signatures, yet didn't succeed until what happened next. On August 26, a SOC account was created named Kevin Dobson. The user tweeted graphic assault fantasies at Anita, before sharing her address and threatening her life. The feminist alerted authorities, quickly retreating to a friend's house. The next day, she publicly shared screenshots. This started a firestorm, with headline after headline about how she'd been driven out of her home. It was likely the last straw for Twitter, who added the report function a month later. Now, many of her critics weren't convinced of the validity of this stalker. They felt it was awfully convenient this took place shortly after her latest video. They theorized she wrote the threats herself, as they were made seconds before the screenshot was taken. That doesn't make much sense though, given the account posted 3 more after the image. They also criticized her for soliciting donations. While these threats were later attributed to Gamergate, the hashtag didn't exist until August 27th. It was coined by actor Adam Baldwin, who linked to Jim's video. The next day, a wave of articles by the mainstream gaming press were released which declared that gamers were dead. The movement was now in full swing, polarizing conversations around Anita further. The industry took her side, with 1,000 devs signing an open letter to end intolerance in gaming. How a petition could change that, I still don't know. Then her story hit the actual mainstream, enraging critics further.
Dear mainstream media, I can't but help find it ironic that you are rushing to the aid of a damsel in distress when that very same damsel has pointed out again and again how sexist it is to rescue damsels like this.
2 days later, a user spammed her with CP, which led her to once again bring up Twitter's poor mechanisms. Thunderfoot uploaded 3 more videos about her that month, including Anita Sarkeesian and the bitchy tweets. This one argued, is it sexist to call someone who is being a bitch, a bitch?
Well, that link is no surprise to her Tumblr account. And if you take a look, you'll see a bunch of screen caps of tweets of people who really don't like Anita. Almost 50 of them. Well, like I was saying, that kind of happens when you lie to people's faces.
This is also when Republicans started taking interest. Milo Yiannopoulos published his first article in support of Gamergate, and Christina Hoff Sommers mocked Anita for the American Enterprise Institute. It wasn't long until the creator of Beat Up Sarkeesian joined the cause. Of course, adding fuel to the fire was her new phrase, listen and believe.
So I leave you with one simple thought. One of the most radical things you can do is to actually believe women when they tell you about their experiences.
In context, it was about victim blaming, but something about the phrase felt draconian. It quickly became the basis for memes criticizing the lack of open discussion surrounding Gamergate. With their crosshairs on the press, the Gamergate movement started targeting advertisers. They managed to get Intel to drop Gamasutra, although the technology company reversed and issued an apology later. Milo tried to refute Anita by emailing San Francisco police, alleging she never filed a report. He retracted this after learning it was handled by the FBI. Gamergate eventually reached NPR, resulting in her first tweet about the hashtag. Even with the uncertainty, she was still scheduled for several venues. That included Utah State University on October 15th, but the event was canceled a day prior after a very detailed bomb threat. The email vowed revenge, threatening the deadliest school shooting in American history. While police quickly determined there was no risk to students, she raised concerns over the state's concealed carry laws. It once again stirred a media frenzy, with the New York Times attributing it to Gamergate. She later wrote an op-ed for the outlet, only propelling her deeper into the mainstream, appearing on MSNBC and the Colbert Report.
So I speak for all gamers when I say the media should stop talking to critics like Anita Sarkeesian. Here now to be talked to is media critic and creator of the web series Feminist Frequency, Anita Sarkeesian.
She was even invited to the International Symposium of Digital Ethics. With Anita at the forefront, everyone began talking about her. Thunderfoot alone uploaded 7 more videos about Anita before the end of the year. TJ Kirk, among many, argued threats like this weren't uncommon online, and most aren't a legitimate danger. This is really when terms like professional victim became popular. It accused people of playing up their own misfortune for profit. It wasn't long until opponents adopted this tactic, which Milo refined into the campus outrage cycle. This would be when him and other online right-wing figures would go to college campuses, feminists would try to shut it down, and they would cry that they're being silenced. Many Gamergaters were irritated enough to identify her harassers themselves. Their efforts were successful enough to get credit from Kotaku even. By this point, discussions surrounding Anita Sarkeesian overshadowed anything related to her actual videos. And theories of Macintosh being the brains of the operation continued to circulate. This intensified after Feminist Frequency uploaded 25 invisible benefits of gaming while male. The video created by McIntosh was made with 25 other men, including Tim Schafer and Adam Sessler. It wasn't long until his surname became synonymous with the archetype of a male feminist. The hashtag FullMacIntosh was coined to mock them, which two male feminists tried to reclaim in song form, very poorly. I'm a beta. While very few on YouTube of note were supportive of Anita, one would make waves by lampooning her critics. That creator was none other than HBomberGuy, whose first video ever ridiculed the duo behind the Sarkeesian effect.
She's a professional victim, I tell you. She fled her home and she's a professional. Those things are technically accurate, goddammit. $15,000. I can't wait to be told what to think by this guy. I mean, he has such amazing thoughts about ethnic minorities.
You should be absolutely furious with the niggers. Not the blacks, the fucking niggers.
On November 6th, Twitter partnered with Women Action and the media to collect data on harassment. This led to several changes, like making it so blocked users can't view your profile. As if to make up for the sheer amount of online criticism, there was an influx of positive coverage. Bloomberg published a puff piece about Anita, calling her gaming's greatest adversary. Polygon named her one of gaming's most important figures. A month later, she was interviewed by ABC about Gamergate alongside Brianna Wu.
Violent depictions of women being beaten, raped, and run over by cars. It's not the movies, it's video games. And now the women calling for change in this multi-billion dollar virtual industry are facing a very real backlash, including death threats.
Then, after originally pulling sponsorships, Intel announced a partnership with Feminist Frequency as part of its new $300 million diversity initiative. The indie game Towerfall paid tribute with a character loosely based on Anita. It was made by the same team behind Celeste. If things couldn't get weirder, Law & Order produced an entire episode about Gamergate called Intimidation Game.
What'd they do to you?
They leveled up.
The plot parallels her harassment with edits of a Sarkeesian stand-in being brutalized. It also strangely has a character played by a young Logan Paul for some reason. The episode was widely ridiculed, quickly becoming a meme in and of itself. Even Anita didn't like it. Predictably, this week's Law & Order SVU was sickening. They trivialized and exploited real-life abuse of women in gaming for entertainment. I really have no idea what the writers of this TV show were even going for. That February, users noticed a peculiar tweet from Feminist Frequency. The text was identical to something McIntosh said in 2012. Interestingly, it was also quoted without attribution by Anita in one of her videos.
I've heard it said that in the game of patriarchy, women are not the opposing team, they are the ball.
For many, this cemented McIntosh as the puppet master, with a detailed video compiling the evidence. This critique showed even more examples of McIntosh saying something and Anita parroting it shortly after. It also showed some clear hypocrisies. In the past, Thunderfoot criticized the duo for calling Christopher Hitchens a racist warmonger 2 days after he died. Then after the Charlie Hebdo terrorist attack, McIntosh said this, "I don't use my free speech to mock and deride the most marginalized and vulnerable in society like Charlie Hebdo." That was while refusing to celebrate the death of Osama bin Laden. "I'm not going to celebrate the killing of any human being, regardless of how reprehensible they might have been." Even people against Gamergate felt they needed to be upfront about their distinctive roles. On the other side, things were falling apart for the Sarkeesian effect. This led to a new video by HBomberGuy, which garnered over 1 million views.
"It's so unexpected that someone wouldn't want to get along with someone who says things like this."
You're a
Even Feminist Frequency's most ardent critics turned against the Sarkeesian effect, with Thunderfoot calling it a reality-bending fail. It was hard not to, given how bizarre some of their criticisms were.
"They haven't said anything about it, but you might also notice that she's learned to smile like a white person. If you look
that's a big wide mouth grin?
Yeah, if you look at her...
Oh
her
no, don't!
Meanwhile, Anita started a series about positive female characters in video games. That year, she was included in Time's 100 Most Influential People by Will Wheaton. Milo instigated, offering a $10,000 donation to charity if she debated him. He then made a quiz challenging readers to guess if quotes were from Anita or the disbarred lawyer Jack Thompson, known for going after gaming in the 2000s. The comparison rang true after Anita and McIntosh criticized Doom 2016 for being too violent. We just saw a packed auditorium full of adults cheering at seeing bodies cut in half with a chainsaw. Really think about that for a moment. Think about it without getting defensive. No one wants to ban Doom, but what message does that send to the world about the gaming community? Jason Martin, an employee at id Software, mocked them on Facebook. This resulted in attempts to get him fired. The next day, anti-feminist frequency posters appeared around E3. They were quickly losing charitability, with some of their takes going beyond parody. That didn't stop John Oliver from referencing her treatment by police.
Listen to how these women were treated when they spoke out against what they saw as sexism in the video game industry.
In July, Jack Thompson himself was asked about Anita in an interview. She's not a warrior on the issue. She's a self-promoter, and I think everyone has pretty much figured that out. Also, she needs to stop whining about how badly treated she has been by the industry. When she gets the front window of her house shot at like I did, then I'll listen to her whining a bit more. The pioneers take the arrows, honey. Deal with it. What's crazy is that even though people criticized Anita by comparing her to Thompson, I remember people siding with him purely out of spite here. Fun fact, I actually made two videos about Anita back in 2015 when all this was going on. One was about the reasons people liked her, and the other was about why people hated her. The first got 80,000 views and a slew of dislikes, while the second has amassed almost 1 million with glowing praise. It just goes to show that people were just picking sides at this point, and didn't actually care about anything else. The last episode of Season 1 of Tropes vs. Women was uploaded on September 14th. The very next day, the Sarkeesian Effect was released. It first premiered at a Gamergate meetup to exactly 9 people with mass ridicule following. Davis is edited out of the entire film, causing him to release his own cut. Weeks later, Anita and Zoe Quinn were invited to speak in front of the United Nations on cyber harassment against women.
By doing this work, I have been the target for 3 years nonstop of egregious online harassment in all levels. I think it's important to recognize that harassment is, as someone had mentioned, it's not just what is legal and illegal, right? Harassment is threats of violence, but it's also the day-to-day grind of you're a liar, you suck, you know, making all of these hate videos to attack us on a regular basis, and the mobs that come from those hate videos, etc.
It was at this point that Gamergate started losing traction, with many of those who rose to prominence coming out of it with a flourishing career. This was the beginning of the skeptics, who all hung out together on Google Hangouts in defiance of the mainstream. That November, Milo accused Anita of faking her followers. Weeks later, she went live on Twitch to play Assassin's Creed. Yiannopoulos' fans raided her chat with the phrase, Big Milo.
Harassers have descended. I think
it was during this stream Jim recognized one of her moderators as a registered sex offender.
Hey, guess who Anita Sarkeesian has as a mod on Twitch?
Oh, God.
No. You're going to love this. A convicted pedophile.
What? Who is it?
What?
Apparently, Valis is a mod on her Twitch stream.
In case there was any doubt, Valis posted this picture of himself after the stream. To all my jealous haters on Twitch and YouTube, you have no power here. It's unclear how this offender became a mod, although footage he submitted to World of Long Plays appeared in Tropes vs. Women. He was subsequently fired, although she never addressed the matter publicly. In December, McIntosh posted a video to Feminist Frequency called 5 Ways Men Can Help End Sexism. He shared outtakes on his own channel, Rebellious Pixels. They were experimenting with other hosts and expanding to general game reviews. They also launched an online harassment safety guide with women action in the media. While Feminist Frequency clearly had big things planned post-Gamergate, a breakup would hinder this progress and lead to the company seeing its painful demise. In January 2016, Anita posted an update to her Kickstarter. Tropes vs. Women was coming to an end after its second season. It comprised 8 new episodes in a new format. The first was uploaded that day about strategic butt coverings. Curiously, McIntosh was no longer credited as a writer or producer in any of these videos. In an email leaked by BuzzFeed, a former Slate writer claimed they broke up well over a year ago. McIntosh rebranded his channel to Pop Culture Detective. His first video under the pseudonym was posted in July, and not long after, he surpassed all of Feminist Frequency's metrics, now sitting at over 1 million subscribers. Many noticed similarities between his videos and the first season of Tropes vs. Women. In contrast, season 2 received harsh criticism, even from fans. There was even a thread on an anti-Gamergate subreddit that asked, "Have Feminist Frequency's takes been getting worse?" It was a catch-22 of Anita Sarkeesian's work, yes. You didn't want to flat-out condemn her because gator assholes going after her for daring to be a woman talking about video games means you need to support her. And yet the things she says, they aren't things I generally agree with once you get beyond the Feminism 101 stuff. She seems to hold that feminism is synonymous with pacifism, for example, which I utterly disagree with. That February, Twitter launched their Trust and Safety Council, hiring over 40 organizations, including Feminist Frequency. A week later, Anita returned to Santa Monica College to kick off Women's Empowerment Month. In the past, McIntosh mocked the idea of feminist media criticism being a lucrative endeavor. But a campus paper revealed Anita now had a $20,000 speaking fee. The info was removed after critics took notice. Additionally, using their numbers, it was calculated her org brought in almost $1 million over the past 2 years. This led many to question how it was used, with $40,000 spent fundraising in 2015. It's pretty hard not to lose charitability as time goes on. Anita appeared at several events that month, including GamerX3, where she said this.
"We need to put pressure on them. Right, we need to either make them fear in some way that they're not going to sell their game, or they could sell their game more if they did this. That somehow challenging them and making them feel like they have to do this."
It seems apparent that after McIntosh left, the focus of Feminist Frequency became much less about video game analysis and more about soliciting donations, consulting fees, and booking venues. That March, Feminist Frequencies sponsored Crash Override Network, an anti-harassment organization started by Alex Lifshitz and Zoe Quinn. 5 days later, Anita announced she was moving on from gaming with a series about history's overlooked women. It was once again crowdfunded, asking for $200,000. In response, TJ Kirk started raising money for the International Women's Health Coalition. Anita responded by calling him a very vocal and known harasser. Kirk ended up raising over $75,000 for women and girls in third world countries. For a while, the two were neck and neck until Cards Against Humanity creator Max Temkin donated $25,000 to Anita. It turns out they'd been closely associated for 3 years. That May, Anil Druckmann spoke about Anita's influence with a subsidiary of Rolling Stone. He recounted a sexist focus tester that was so upset by their decisions, he left and cursed them out. The French Minister of Digital Affairs also credited Anita as the inspiration for a series of legislative proposals that would introduce tax penalties against games with sexual themes, ignoring the fact that French films are notorious for being sexually explicit. This was, thankfully, unsuccessful. It was around this time in August of 2016 that over 850,000 lines were leaked from the Crash Override Network Skype group. It proved many of Gamergate's targets were colluding, at least to some degree. That included Ian Miles Chong, who owned up to his involvement and verified they were real. He admitted that, beyond doxing, the group discussed contacting employers to get people fired. There were also threats to sue anyone that supported Gamergate into financial oblivion. While Sarkeesian wasn't present, her then-secretary, Catherine Cross, was. They tried to use their connections to get the Sarkeesian effect taken off of Patreon, but were unsuccessful. Funnily enough, a leaked conversation shows members insulting McIntosh. "Like those bad feminist dudes we were talking about." Speaking over is a great way to put it, in my honest opinion. McIntosh? Him? Yes. I don't like how he does that. A lot. Yeah, I don't follow him. Enough white dudes on my timeline. Brianna Wu criticized Anita's ex publicly for his male privilege. With 2016 being an especially polarizing year, it's perhaps unsurprising they were upset with the election of Donald Trump. Anita uploaded two videos calling for people to join their cause before asking for donations yet again.
Because of your enthusiastic belief in our work, Feminist Frequency has achieved so much over the past 4 years, but we still need your help. Your contribution at this crucial time ensures that we can keep progressing over the next 4 years.
At the beginning of 2017, the FBI released a 173-page document about its threat investigations during Gamergate. They primarily cover the reports about Sarkeesian and Brianna Wu. While heavily redacted, many documents can be matched to known incidents. That included the threats at GDC and Utah State University. After reading the email for the latter, I can understand why it specifically distressed her. It's worded like a manifesto and references specific massacres. That being said, a lot of the other threats were clearly just trolls. My name is Redacted of Gamergate. At this moment, we have over 9,000 bombs that we will use to blow up the TSC auditorium. You done goofed by inviting that feminazi to give a lecture. You're f***ing dead, kiddos. While it was exhaustive, in the end, their investigations petered out. The FBI weren't able to identify any culprits. They declined to prosecute others and struggled with jurisdictional issues. At the very least, it put to rest the idea she wasn't reporting threats as she did seem concerned for her safety. 2 months later, Anita would end up in a controversy with YouTuber and former Polygon writer Nick Robinson. On March 26th, Nick tweeted, "No offense, but anyone who acts like they don't jack off to Crystal from Star Fox Adventures is lying to you." Anita responded to this obvious joke by saying, "Nobody in our office feels that way about Crystal. In fact, we find her character deeply disappointing. Here's why." She then linked to the first part of Damsels in Distress. Attitudes like this are indicative of just how male-dominated gamer culture remains. This led the entirety of Twitter to accuse the feminist of shaming him for being a furry. However, a few months later, Nick was called out for being creepy towards women in the industry and begging for nudes. He was suspended by Polygon and the next day fired. The final episode of Tropes vs. Women was uploaded on April 27th, 2017. With that, she concluded the series. In her 2012 Kickstarter, Anita promised 12 videos with a specific list of subjects. But if we look at the topics outlined, 4 of the 12 were never made. Now, she did make videos in their place, but they all concerned sexualization. It's possible the originals were dropped once McIntosh left the project, but her backers didn't seem to mind. Still, I find it outrageous that people gave her money for a new crowdfunding project while she never actually finished the first one. Shortly after, it was discovered Sarkeesian's dad had an online presence. That's because users found he donated $400 to Donald Trump. It turns out he ran a website criticizing Turkey and its current sitting president. They were apparently no longer on good terms, although this is speculation. Following Tropes vs. Women, Anita started several series including The Freak Show that would receive a fraction of her viewership from a few years prior. Losing her cultural relevance, her critics would soon have a chance to confront the woman that they had mocked for the past half decade. If you've been paying attention, you may have noticed a specific name missing from the record up until this point. Carl Benjamin, otherwise known as Sargon of Akkad. This jolly British chap was a skeptic that grew prominent amidst Gamergate. While the first videos on his channel predate the movement, they were still about Anita. His coverage ranged from her past in teleseminars to her being a fake gamer. He also started This Week in Stupid, covering whatever crazy SJWs were in the news that week. This resulted in him becoming one of Anita's most popular critics, doing crossovers with Milo, Jim, and Thunderfoot. By early 2017, his channel amassed over 620,000 subscribers. It should be apparent by now that Anita rarely responds to her critics. That made it of particular note when she was scheduled to speak about harassment at a panel at that year's VidCon. While she appeared a year prior, this time around, all the prominent skeptic and commentary YouTubers came together to hang out. This is an era where you would see people like Your Movie Sucks and Maddox standing next to a Kekistani flag held by Chris Raygun, Andy Worski, and Mundane Matt. There was a minor outcry after several breadtubers had an amicable dinner with Shoe on Head and Armored Skeptic. But that's all besides the point. The event had several panels about women's representation, with Anita's on June 22nd. It was scheduled at the Press Play stage from 5 to 6pm. This is where the anti-SJWs were to attack as her critics planned to show up early and fill up the first three rows, with some even streaming it live. The attendees included Bunty King and of course Sargon, who sat in the very front. Anita noticed this shortly after her intro, with her expression quickly souring. A minute later, she announced a notorious harasser was in the audience filming them.
I could be wrong, but I think there's someone in the front row that is a notorious harasser of mine that's filming this panel, so I think it's important to keep having these conversations.
They continued talking for the next 7 minutes, motioning in his direction until she decided to call him a garbage human.
If you Google my name on YouTube, you get shitheads like this dude who are making these dumbass videos.
The hijinks didn't end there either, with Joey Salad showing up during the Q&A to argue with them about harassment.
Why do you guys act like only women face harassment online?
Of course, Sargon capitalized on this by changing his name on Twitter to Garbage Human. He then called for VidCon to reprimand Anita, accusing her of abuse. Shocking to be harassed by Anita at VidCon just for attending her panel. We'll show it to my 600,000 subs tomorrow. The one time Anita engages with a critic is to bully them. Absolutely no empathy shown towards a victim of abuse. This is exactly the kind of follower Anita attracts, VidCon. It quickly made the rounds with many of the skeptics present covering the ordeal. Sargon quickly uploaded his own, directed towards VidCon's founders, Hank and John Green.
I was sat quietly anticipating an interesting discussion, but instead, Sarkeesian decided to use her position of institutional privilege as one of VidCon's featured creators to launch an unprovoked tirade of abuse after singling me out specifically to bully, culminating in her calling me a shithead and a garbage human.
He pointed to the event's code of conduct, arguing her actions constituted harassment. He then goes on to explain his favorite part of the event, meeting his favorite creator, Boogie2988.
Being abused by Anita Sarkeesian was understandably my least favorite part of VidCon so far, compared to the highlight, which was bumping into my favorite content creator, Boogie2988.
He mentioned this because Miss Sarkeesian was set to appear on another panel with Boogie about cyberbullying. He called for people to petition the co-founders over email in order to have her removed.
For this reason, I am formally petitioning VidCon's co-founders, Hank and John Green, to remove Anita Sarkeesian from the cyberbullying panel on Saturday.
The end cyberbullying panel was scheduled on June 24th. It seemingly went without a hitch, although the comments compared her to having Adolf Hitler on a diversity panel. Anita finally responded 2 days later after the event was over. She argued that, contrary to their stated intentions, they were there to intimidate her and put her on edge. She also said the insult wasn't comparable to his entire online career. This sentiment was echoed by outlets like Polygon and The Mary Sue. That same day, Sargon appeared on Joe Rogan and relayed his side of events. Rogan clearly had no idea who this guy was, as he was only able to get on through connections to other guests.
In fact, okay. Have you not heard about this?
No, dude, I'm insulated.
Oh, dude, this is actually
hilarious,
right?
I live in the real
world.
It's crazy.
So Anita Sarkeesian, she spots me sitting in the audience, and then she starts freaking out.
Freaking out.
Yeah, she starts saying things like, there's a constant harasser of mine, she called me a shithead, she called me a garbage human.
A garbage human?
I did nothing to her.
This is when Sargon admits he's made over 30 videos about the feminist, which clearly takes Rogan aback.
Like, and she's under the impression that all of my videos are about her. And I actually, on the ride over, I got people to like count it up for me. I've made around 30 videos in about 4 years referring to her. And
that's a lot.
No. It sounds like a lot, but that's less than 4% of the videos I've made. I've made 780 videos. I work hard.
I'm sure you do, but that's still 30 videos. I don't care if you've made 100 million videos. You still made 30 videos about her.
I don't think that's a large number.
Things only intensified a day later when Boogie uploaded his side of meeting Sarkeesian at the event. It's hard to imagine now, given his crypto scams, lying about cancer and face tattoos, but Boogie was viewed as the Mr. Rogers of the internet at the time. This is very important context for what happens next. Boogie explains he was so afraid of upsetting Anita, he spent 6 weeks preparing, rehearsing his statements, and even verifying them with other panelists and organizers. While the event went mostly well, she supposedly took issue with his closing statements.
And I said that I wanted to remind everybody in the audience that I am a person of privilege as a white cis male. And then I went over the types of attacks that have happened to me again with the assassins and the boxes of feces and all of that kind of stuff. And then just try to remind the audience that if, you know, whoever you are, if it can happen to me, it can happen to you. And then try to remind everybody that this isn't a matter of identity politics. This is a human rights issue.
That apparently set her off, leading Anita to confront him afterward.
I'm shaking, very, very nervous, but I felt like it went well. And when I get off of the stage at the bottom of the panels, there's Anita, and she seemed to be very, very upset. And I don't remember exactly what she said. I'm paraphrasing here, but she said in a very upset that I think it was very fucking uncool that you said what you said there at the end, knowing that no one else would have enough time to respond. And I bet you can imagine how that affected my anxiety, because the exact focal point of my anxiety for the entire weekend, in fact, for the last 6 weeks, the nightmare scenario that I was terrified of actually had come true. I had upset somebody who I very, very much had tried to not upset and did not want to upset.
Now, this isn't where the video ends. Boogie goes on to explain she calmed down and they had a civil conversation in the green room. This led him to receive mass dislikes, with many accusing him of defending a bully. The incident would end up sparking an entirely new wave of backlash, with known domestic abuser I'm Alex calling her out for berating the nicest man on the internet. It's worth pointing out, Boogie would give a much different recount of events to the skeptics later on.
I mean, nobody cried. She shoved her fucking finger in my fucking face and wagged that shit. She's like, I don't fucking appreciate what you fucking sit up there knowing I don't have no fucking time to fucking respond. And I'm like, lady, I have an anxiety disorder, so I recommend you walk away right now, and we can talk in a few minutes. Because I don't want to depersonalize and say or do anything that's going to get either of us kicked out of VidCon. She's like, I didn't know about your anxiety disorder. I'm like, well, now you do, so give me some fucking space.
Even amidst this outrage, VidCon ultimately apologized to Anita in a statement for subjecting her to a hostile environment. Hank Green clarified prior to the outrage, he had no idea who any of these creators were. The decision was so unpopular, Philip DeFranco called it ridiculous.
What is the point of having a policy in place when people break that policy and the net result is you apologize to them?
While understandable that Anita wasn't disciplined, it does come across as bizarre that such a large event had to say sorry because she chose to get in a fight with people in the audience, even if they were smugly staring at her. By July 1st, Sargon had uploaded 9 videos about Anita since VidCon. He was milking it for all it was worth. In response to the controversy, Patreon began investigating his account. He would end up getting banned off the platform in late 2018, with staff directly citing the VidCon incident. The convention issued another apology that year, stating they'd be adding more security to panels that might get out of hand. Following the VidCon fallout, there were several minor controversies surrounding Anita. On July 20th, 2017, she streamed Dream Daddy, a gay dating sim by the Game Grumps. This led many to criticize her for objectifying men. The late Total Biscuit garnered a negative reputation in many circles for not condemning Gamergate. He also criticized Anita publicly on several occasions. This resulted in backlash when he was interviewed by Kotaku, including a direct complaint from Anita herself. Outrageous and irresponsible of Kotaku UK to post this puff piece on a GamerGator on the hate movement's anniversary. The writer Rich Stanton issued a public apology and deleted the article. Funnily enough, users uncovered a tweet from 2015 where Stanton admitted, "Biggest irony in games? Gamergate made Sarkeesian's videos untouchable. They're poor and often inaccurate. Will I criticize them? Not a chance." The first upload to Feminist Frequency after VidCon was on August 30th. It was also the start of the channel uploading a bunch of lazy podcasts, which caused views to plummet below 1,000 per episode. Undeterred, Anita announced a new book called History vs. Women, and got invited to the week-long JoCo cruise. She then once again asked for donations in a YouTube video. While her series about gaming had ended, her work in the industry hadn't. In February of 2018, she was given a tour of BioWare's Edmonton office. Rumors circulated that many devs were upset with her visit. A month later, Trump blamed violent video games in the wake of the Parkland shooting. Anita criticized him for using the genre as a scapegoat. This led many to accuse her of hypocrisy, although I should reiterate she never actually said video games cause sexism or violence. In May, Feminist Frequency ran a spring fundraiser with one goal being a public Discord server. It was set at the absurd milestone of $25,000, but they would end up succeeding, collecting over $31,000. Bizarrely, a month later, she complained about the scene's lack of ethics, blaming pro-Gamergate journalists. It was around this time she mocked Mundane Matt for trying to contact director Rian Johnson about the movement. "This misogynist fool was harassing and stalking me years before the hashtag Gamergate was ever dreamt up by a douchebag D-list celebrity." In August, Anita was invited to the tabletop convention Gen Con as a guest of honor. The event was also attended by Jeremy Hambly, better known as The Quartering. Hambly would end up getting sucker punched, with the attacker identified as one of her fans. Real talk, if you have a problem with Anita being invited to Gen Con, fight me. I'm easy to find. The perpetrator named Matt Lauder was sued and eventually apologized. With visits to BioWare, Naughty Dog, and Arkane, Feminist Frequency's influence at this point was undeniable. Well, the formerly mentioned Hambly obtained and later released to Ubisoft leaks that showed direct mention of her series. If that wasn't enough, her videos appeared at an exhibit in the V&A Museum of London. In early 2019, she participated in the hashtag SaferGDC. Her thread calls out male allies that were often predatory or abusive themselves. Shortly after, she launched herself as the head of a team of paid consultants. Then she called out EA for donating millions to other nonprofits. Sorry, what? EA is donating $1 million to nonprofits working to end bullying and online harassment? They didn't speak up during Gamergate at all. Feminist Frequency has been a nonprofit on the front lines of this issue for years, constantly struggling with funding. Those of us who were canaries in the coal mine, who sacrificed to make sure people recognize this dire problem, we are not remembered when it's politically safe to speak up. Anita also tried to desperately land a consulting gig on Cyberpunk 2077. It was also around this time she began collecting data in order to expose gaming's most toxic trends. This materialized in an article for Wired analyzing the number of games with female protagonists at E3. There appeared to be another media push for her around this time, with Polygon running a feature interview called The Anita Sarkeesian Story. This article was her mulling over her poor metrics. After some digging, users discovered Feminist Frequency started 2019 with only $30,000. Their costs for 2018 were $300,000. The org was going bankrupt, with longtime co-writer Carolyn Petit no longer taking salary. At the end of the year, Feminist Frequency asked for money to start a harassment support hotline. They raised $25,000, with the concept becoming the Games and Online Harassment Hotline. Hambly tried out the number by jokingly reporting Keemstar, finding it was mostly bot responses. The service didn't officially launch, however, until August. Throughout 2020, Duke University's Kenan Institute for Ethics published several interviews as part of its Ethics and Now series. They spoke with Sarkeesian, who criticized YouTube's political rabbit holes, specifically naming Joe Rogan. She called him extremely dangerous, becoming one of many voices criticizing his podcast at the time. This was also around when details of The Last of Us Part 2 leaked, sparking massive backlash. Many speculated Anita's involvement, although Druckmann denied the rumor. If you'll recall, Max Temkin, the creator of Cards Against Humanity, was once close with Anita. This association shattered after accusations of both rape and workplace abuse. On June 9th, she publicly severed ties while admitting she had been complicit. Because of this, she tried her best to platform the accusers' stories while explaining their confrontation. In November of 2019, I confronted Max about the rape allegations and told him that I was being a hypocrite by associating with him, and not living by my feminist principles by continuing the friendship. I was told that if he genuinely wanted to work towards repairing the harm he caused, I would try to help, otherwise he could no longer be acquainted. Max told me that he wanted to do whatever he could to keep our relationship intact. I urged him to take a couple of days to reflect and then to get back to me so that we could make a plan. I never heard from him again. Instead, he unfollowed and blocked me on social media. While fluff pieces continued to appear for Anita and her projects, her relevance had long since faded. In late 2022, she announced an original series for Nebula called That Time When. It didn't receive any attention, although the last episode discusses Gamergate.
That was also just a few months before I launched a Kickstarter to create a series of videos examining sexist patterns in video games, which definitely attracted the attention of those defenders of gaming. The term harassment is a massive understatement for the sort of unrelenting vitriolic abuse directed at me in response. But I don't want to revisit that trauma, so, you know, just Google it if you don't believe me.
Finally, on August 1st, 2023, Feminist Frequency announced it was officially shutting down. She was going to take a break, with the organization gradually ceasing operations until early 2024. It truly marked the end of an era, having been around for nearly 15 years. The industry and the internet as a whole changed a lot since she started the series. Looking back now, her videos weren't that crazy, especially given the eventual wave of breadtubers we see today. If a series like her existed in 2024, I don't think it would have received nearly the same level of backlash or promotion either. Of course, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Just last year, Anita held a wedding-themed 40th birthday party. This, of course, led many on right-wing Twitter to mock her for being unmarried and childless. In conclusion, for as much as I think Anita Sarkeesian was media-trained and intentionally trying to enter martyrdom, it's also hard to deny that she had a point that the level of hatred she received for a pretty benign series of videos was absurd. And not just the death threats either, but also the cottage industry of people starting their careers off by making dozens of videos picking apart her series to the point of parody. The way journalists would write fluff pieces for her without seeking comment from her good faith critics also backfired, as it set the groundwork for large swaths of young men to not trust journalists and veer to the right, an occurrence I don't think would have happened otherwise to such a great extent. What cannot be denied is that Anita Sarkeesian changed internet discourse forever, with us still seeing the ripple effects to this very day.